Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Erin. I've been given a different frame, I think, to look at impact and the research excellence framework through. And I think my tone is probably going to be slightly more optimistic. But we'll see. However, in addressing the question, I'm going to start by looking at, does UK research currently reach out to the public? And there are some, I think, frankly, troubling statistics that I'm going to share with you. I'm then going to think about the question, should research actually reach out? And finally, I'm going to think a little about what researchers themselves might do to do this reaching out. So first of all, does UK research reach out to the public? There is surprisingly little evidence. But UUK did some market research in 2010, and I think these statistics are interesting. Of the 2,000 people that they interviewed, a representative sample of the population, only 17% thought that universities had a major impact on society, which I think is an interesting and worrying figure. Interestingly, the biggest impact was thought to be on promoting technological innovation. 58% saying they thought they had an impact there. One in 10 of the people interviewed believe that universities have absolutely no contribution to the economy at all. Nearly one in 5 put the contribution at or below £100 million. And only 2%, and I would love to meet this 2%, identified UK universities' £31 billion contribution to the UK economy. So I think quite stark figures to reflect on. Another source of evidence is a piece of research that BIS do every 2 or 3 years called Public Attitudes to Science. And by science, BIS encompass the whole of the kind of Research Council investments into arts, humanities, social sciences, as well as more conventional sciences. David Willetts' introduction was quite frank that, although the report suggests there is still much to do if we're to become a nation where an increasing appetite for science is matched by personal commitment and action, there was a sense that people had an interest in science, but that actually there are a lot of barriers to that interest actually being genuinely lived out in people's lives. So here is a little spider diagram that you can't probably see, but at the top, 82% of people agreed that science is such a big part of our lives that we should all take an interest. But then if you move down to the bottom left, only 51% of those people who took part thought that they heard or saw, well, actually, they thought they heard and saw too little about science. So there's 50% of the population who have an appetite for more, and only 43% felt informed about science and scientific research and developments. So clearly something of a mismatch between the level of interest and actually the level of engagement that's happening. Finally, stepping back a little to look at the kind of university and the research system, and why is it that perhaps the relationship between researchers and the public is a little lacking in realising that potential of public interest? This was commissioned by the Royal Society with the Wellcome Trust back in the mid-2000s, and it found a set of barriers to what they call science communication, research communication. 64% of the academics interviewed, or the researchers, said that the need to spend more time on research was stopping them getting more engaged. That was the top response. 29% said that time taken away from research was the main drawback for engaging with the public. 20% agreed that scientists who engaged are less well regarded by other scientists. So a sort of set of interesting kind of cultural factors, not only that intense pressure to be publishing, but also the professional culture of science itself looked down on people who were engaging. A key driver of these behaviours was identified as the research assessment exercise, having a negative influence. And science communication was viewed as altruistic and not a core part of academic life. And then finally, something that I find entertaining, public engagement activity was seen as bad for careers. It was done by those who were not good enough for an academic career, and public engagement was seen as light or fluffy. and risk reinforcing negative stereotypes for women involved in such activity. So, I mean, that's a lightning tour of some of the evidence we have about that relationship between research and wider society. I want to now ask the question, should research reach out to the public? Actually, maybe that's fine. Maybe actually there are more important things for us to be getting on with than worrying about that gap, perhaps. And I'm going to offer some reasons why I think actually it is important for us to be better engaged, as you would expect I would. UUK, interestingly, did a piece of work called Analysing Trends that was published earlier this year, where they looked at the futures for higher education. And they tried to model what's changing around higher education and what are the potential positive and negative forces that universities and their funders are going to need to navigate over the next 10 to 20 years. And in terms of reaching a positive future, they identified an increasing integration of institutional interest with the wider public good. There's something about how universities are appreciated by, understood, and engaged with by wider society that is going to be absolutely critical to the health of the system as we know it. And if we get that right, universities will be placed at the heart of economic and social advancement. So quite a visionary picture, I think, of why engagement matters. And one of my favourite diagrams, this yellow arrow shooting up from the bottom right to the top left is a sense of direction and momentum. And if we get to the top left of that rectangle, we will have universities at the heart of social and economic advance. How are we going to get there? They identify a couple of key pressure points. Critically, ensuring that universities continue to remain fully engaged in society at all levels, understanding its needs and developments. If we don't have that interaction and that intelligent two-way dialogue with the society that hosts us and that funds us, we're going to struggle, and we're going to go heading off to a place of self-interested, protectionist, and marginalised activity. Another way of thinking about it, rather than using diagrams, for me is a picture like this, which actually conveys what I think the essence of engagement is. And I just want to offer you three frames for looking at this picture and for thinking about why university engagement matters and why engagement, particularly with research, matters. The first of these, I think, is about community, actually. It's about the fact that universities are situated both in local, regional, and global communities. And I think there are a set of questions about the values that drive us as people who work within universities and our sense of social responsibility. And I think we need to think about impact and think about community. But that's not the only lens. I think another lens is to think about citizenship. You see, I'm choosing things that begin with C, you'll notice. So we've had community, we're thinking about citizenship, and I think we're thinking about the sense in which there's a lot written about how representative democracy is being challenged by new forms of democratic participation, by participatory democracy. Crudely, a sense that people are tired, perhaps with old forms of accountability, but very engaged in challenging those people in authority, questioning their license to practice. And I think universities need to operate in such a world. And the pressure points around accountability and how are we accounting for the way we spend billions of pounds of public money, issues around trust and how are we negotiating how that money is spent are absolutely fundamental questions. And the final lens that, again, I think this picture helps think about is about collaboration. And I think that's come up a lot in previous presentations, but the sense in which, and I am a great optimist, and I was very inspired by Peter's work around Mode 2 knowledge, and I would like to think that we could make the research excellence framework a step towards Mode 2 knowledge, but this sense we're moving beyond knowledge transfer, we're moving beyond innovation pipelines where we pump knowledge out of universities, but we operate in a world where genuine partnership, networking, respect for other people's expertise, creative teamwork is absolutely fundamental to how we are going to continue to do excellent research. And I suppose I'm offering you an optimistic view, but I think the way that the REF actually frames research is a call for those ideas, frankly. It's saying research is a process of investigation leading to new insights effectively shared. I think it's that effectively shared I'm interested in. That's shared with our academic peers, of course. It's shared across disciplines, but it's very much shared with those people that we collaborate with and that we have a responsibility to outside the universities. So briefly, finally, to think about, well, how might such interaction and engagement be encouraged? The project I've been lucky enough to be involved in for the last 4 years was funded to look at university public engagement. Six Beacon projects were funded around the UK, and some sort of key lessons emerged from that about, well, how might universities tackle those issues around their professional cultures that inhibit engagement? And the first thing that became blindingly obvious, and this is all common sense, I hope, is a sense of purpose, actually. A really clear strategic vision for why engagement matters to you. This is just one example of how one of the Beacon universities was choosing about a year ago to convey through its homepage its sense of purpose. Its mission to be a world-class research-intensive university to deliver teaching and learning of the highest quality, to play a leading role in the economic, social and cultural development of the northeast of England. So a very clear proposition. In the middle is a campaign they were choosing to run around one of their centres of research excellence, which was around ageing. So that sense of purpose, critical. This, some of you will be familiar with, I'm sure many of you will, is the research and development framework that Vitae have developed, and Alison will be speaking after lunch. But this is an attempt to kind of think about, well, what does engagement and effective research mean and look like in the 21st century? And they identified four domains. Of course, knowledge and intellectual abilities. Of course, research governance and organisation. But equally, personal effectiveness. And in the top right, engagement, influence and impact. A real sense that from early career researchers right through to senior research leaders, a balance of those skills is going to be critical to the future of our work. And I think, again, one of the things we learned is how do you build the kind of the professional development, the networking, and the skill sharing within universities where that balance of skills can be developed. Finally, just thinking about partnership, really, thinking about the people that you might work with. This is an incredibly crude diagram, but this sense of a university in the middle of a whole host of partnerships with the public, with the community and third sector, with business, with policy, with public sector, actually really thinking seriously about how we make those partnerships work not just for us, but for those people who we partner with, and really thinking carefully about that and trying to break some of these silos between, oh, we've got our knowledge transfer and tech transfer people over there and we've got our community development people here, etc., but beginning to think much more holistically in a visionary way about engagement and about partnership. So I've offered a rather more optimistic sense of what might be possible with the REF. The organisation that I run in Bristol, I guess, was set up to promote culture change. So I think the best way to promote culture change is to interest people in big ideas and get them excited, and to ask questions about the values and the purposes that drive their work. So that's what I'll end with. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.